It's Blue Jays talk. The phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We begin the festivities with Eddie in Fort Erie, who's made a career of calling radio shows. Eddie, you're the leadoff man on Blue Jays talk. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Mike. That's funny. You know what? I have a couple of things I wanted to talk about. Number one, I just wanted to agree with what Jerry and Joe said about the fans in Chicago with Mark Burley. I mean, they were so great to him tonight, and I think one of the things that really made Burley great was the fact that he always pitched well in those big games, especially when he won the World Series in 2005. I think that was one of the crowning moments for that organization, because they haven't been there in like a long time, and he was one of the main guys. So that was great for them to acknowledge Burley's presence tonight.
You know what? I talked about this on Twitter early in the game. I don't know who the Blue Jays equivalent is to a Mark Burley coming back to Chicago. This is a guy who pitched there for 12 years, won a World Series, threw a perfect game. Maybe Jimmy Key? Maybe?
I'm just saying, it was great that they were, great to him, and it was nice to see everybody there tonight, and it was great. And I wanted to talk about the Milwaukee series coming up as far as Edwin Encarnacion goes. Do you think that they're going to rotate him around if he's good enough to go? Like, by that I mean, do you think...
No, he's not playing third base.
Yeah,
No, I guess it could. I mean, I'm not going to say I can't be as strong with that no as I want to be. But I would think with Edwin just coming back off that quad thing, he hasn't even played first base yet. He DH'd last night and he DH'd today, and I believe he's going to DH again tomorrow. So it's hard for me to imagine that they're going to have him playing third base in Milwaukee.
All right. I mean, it was just a thought, because I know he was at third base playing in San Diego, and I thought he played okay. And I thought, if he's good enough to play, third base, just to have Adams bat in the lineup, or if they need to have a lefty on righty thing, they'll put him at first base and have Valencia at third. That kind of thing I was thinking about for the moment.
Yeah, I know. You don't want to have Adam Lind's bat out of the lineup, absolutely, against any right-handed pitcher. The Blue Jays are facing Mike Fiers in the first game, Jimmy Nelson in the second, so it's a couple of righties who are scheduled to start for the Brewers, so it's definitely a thing. If he wasn't just back off the disabled list after missing 5 weeks, I would say absolutely, but I don't think so because of that.
All right, Mike. Have a good night.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate the call. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Who is it for you? Who's the Blue Jay equivalent of a pitcher like Mark Burley coming back to Chicago? Pitcher, 12 years, won a World Series, pitched a perfect game. It's an icon in the city. Roy Halladay wasn't even part of a playoff team here. Not his fault, of course. But he doesn't have that same... It doesn't carry the same weight. Pat Henkin won a Cy Young, won a World Series, was part of both World Series teams. Maybe Pat Henkin coming back here with Baltimore. But Burley pitched there 12 years. Pat was only here 7 or 8 his first time around. Love Pat Henkin. He's probably listening. So maybe he wants to call in and let us know who he thinks it is. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Bill in Newmarket, listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing? Good. Listen, we'll get to this quick. First, I will go with Pat Henkin.
Okay.
He was astounding, really. When you really needed something, he was there. So that would answer your first question. Second thing is, I look back and I listen. I don't watch the TV very often, so I listen to these games here on 590.
Which is how you should be doing it, absolutely.
Well, yeah, because then I can do dishes, whatever, I'm not missing anything. I think I listen to them in April and early May, and back then they were as they are now. But they had a couple of turnaround games there at the beginning of May, just like the one they had tonight. And I got a funny feeling we're going to start seeing a major winning streak again.
Well, I certainly don't think they're going to win 20 out of their next 24 games or anything like that, like they did in May.
I would say about 17, 18.
What?
I would say they're going to win around 17 or 18 of the next 25. And the only
That's a
reason
heck of a
I'm
streak.
Going to say that, only
wow.
reason I can say that, and McCowan had a bad night tonight. He threw that wild pitch. Fine day.
McCowan did not have a bad night tonight.
No, he had a bad night, but
no.
he did not pitch bad.
No, he didn't.
He had a bad night because of the wild pitch that got away.
Well, that's a pitch. Deonner Navarro had a bad night on that pitch.
Yeah.
That was not Dustin McGowan's fault at all.
No, I'm not saying that it was his problem. I said he had a bad night. Things went against him.
Okay. But he didn't have a bad night. He faced two guys. He got a fly ball and a ground ball.
Yeah.
And Deonner Navarro didn't get down on a pitch in the dirt that he has to get down on.
But that's what I'm agreeing with. What I'm saying, he had a bad night because of that. But he'll come back maybe tomorrow and pitch, and three in a row he'll get out, and that won't happen. And that's what I'm starting to see from the pitching, from the relieving core. Jansen had a bad night a couple of nights ago. Fine, you're going to have those. But lately, I've watched them be ahead 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. The other team come back, they tie it up, they go ahead. But today, they proved. We can do it back to them. Exactly the next inning, they went out there, got another three runs back, and away they went.
They did. It's true. I appreciate the call. The last time you saw the Blue Jays up 2-0, 3-0, 4-0 was a week and a half ago, last Friday. It hasn't happened a lot lately. But I kind of get what you're saying, and people think I'm an optimist. I don't think they're going to win 17 out of their next 25 games. It would be swell. But the truth of the matter is that every time the Blue Jays have had a long drought, a 4-12, a 5-11, a 3-10 like they're on right now, they have come out of it, and they've come out of it really, really well. And I know that the default in Toronto is pessimism and sky falling and world ending, but it's not necessarily the case. No reason to believe that they can't come out of it and start winning again. David is in Stony Creek. David, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hi, Mike. I've got a question about Adam Lind. I know historically, he's unsuccessful against lefties, but he's changed so dramatically as a hitter.
No, he hasn't.
He's not a power hitter any longer.
He never was really a power hitter. He's always been a gap-to-gap guy. He's always been a good average hitter who gets on base against right-handed pitching. He's no different now than he has ever been.
Okay, so you're saying he's never going to get an opportunity to hit lefties again?
He's had almost 1,000 plate appearances as an opportunity to hit lefties.
But my point was that I think that he's changed. You don't see that he's changed as he's in a 300-plus hitter in the last year and a half, ever since his career almost went basically down the tubes about when he was injured and so forth a year and a half or 2 years ago. I don't see him swinging for the fences anymore. I see him as a sophisticated, more mature hitter now.
I don't think you're remembering Adam Lind correctly from before. He was never an immature hitter. He was always a guy who was good against righties. Now he's very good. But he's always a guy whose numbers against lefties dragged down his overall numbers. He had some serious issues back in 2010-11 when he was terrible, but he was still solid against righties. He's never been that homer happy, pull happy guy. He's always been a really, really good hitter against right-handed pitching, and he's always been pretty bad against lefties. Last year, 7 for his last 70 against left-handed pitching. Adam Lind is a wonderful, wonderful platoon hitter. There aren't many better. I don't know why people try to delude themselves into thinking he's a lot more than that. He's not. And it's wonderful that he is what he is. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-3, blow a 3-0 lead, and come right back after giving up three in the sixth. The first four hitters in the top of the seventh inning go single, double, double, single, and all of a sudden it's 6-3, and there's your final. We will continue our Blue Jays talk on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca, all the way to 11 o'clock Eastern. It's the Honda Postgame Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Six-3 Blue Jays. They snap a four-game losing streak. I think a seven-game road losing streak. Not that that really matters. But they pick up a win, and they pick up a half game in the wild card chase and a full game in the AL East because Seattle and Baltimore both lost. Still a half game ahead of the New York Yankees are the Blue Jays for third place. In the American League East. Right now, Boston leads Houston 7-6 in the top of the eighth, and it's the Angels over Texas 5-2 in the bottom of the seventh. If the Angels win that game, they move into a virtual tie for first place in the American League West. Who saw that coming? With Oakland losing 4-3 to the Atlanta Braves. They move into a virtual tie if that happens. Blue Jays try to take a series tomorrow afternoon. We're on the air at 1:30 p.m. Eastern for a 2:10 first pitch. Drew Hutchison against Scott Carroll. Blue Jays talk continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. And the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership with the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Brett Armstrong, and Joe Sicilia, I'm Mike Wilner. Bye-bye.
By Bautista, Melky scores, and the Blue Jays get the three right back that Chicago scored in the bottom of the sixth inning and lead it 6-3.
The Blue Jays had just given up a three-run lead, and it took them all of four hitters in the seventh inning to get that lead back. That's the kind of Blue Jays offense we're used to seeing. Munenori Kawasaki led off the inning with a pinch hit, infield single. Then Jose Reyes doubled him to third. Melky Cabrera doubled them both in. Should have been a triple, and I'm sure that the official scorer will take a look at that one, one hopes. And then that single from Bautista made it 6-3. And that was it. Blue Jays beat the Chicago White Sox by a score of 6-3. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk, and the phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Taking your calls at the top of the hour here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and was asking earlier, who is the Blue Jays equivalent of Mark Burley? Who would that be coming back to pitch in Toronto? Burley spent the first 12 years of his career in Chicago, won a World Series with them, pitched a perfect game with them. Do we even have an equivalent in Toronto to that? I'm not sure we do. I mean, Roy Halladay was great, no question. He's a Hall of Famer. But he wasn't part of a winning team here, no fault of his own. Dave Steeb was phenomenal for the Blue Jays. But he really wasn't part of the team that won the World Series. He did pitch in 1992, but not well and got hurt and wasn't in the playoffs. I've suggested maybe Jimmy Key. Others have suggested Pat Henkin. What do you think? Sam is in North York. You're on the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sam, who would your Mark Burley equivalent be for the Blue Jays?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I think Roy Halladay is the closest thing we have to it, but it's not quite the same. But I called to talk about something different. First of all, it's a great win. I just want to preface my comment by saying that I'm not one of the pessimists. I don't think that the season's over. I think far from it. I think we're right in the thick of it. And I obviously think it's going to go right down to the final games of the season, with our final 2 weeks being against Seattle, New York, and Baltimore exclusively.
Yep.
Now, there's one thing I agree that the prices were pretty much ridiculous across the board at the trade deadline. So I'm not upset that Alex didn't overpay and risk giving up much of what we're going to be excited about for the next 4 or 5 years with this team, hopefully. There is one guy, though, that you have not been a fan of that we could have picked up on. And I just want to say it's Chase Headley. And I just want to say that Bob Elliott wrote a report in the Toronto Sun saying that the Padres wanted Juan Francisco for Chase Headley and were willing to pay the remainder of his salary for the rest of the year. So there wasn't even a financial concern there.
That report, and I love Bob Elliott, and Bob Elliott is right on so many things. I have been told by people who would know that that report was not correct, that the Blue Jays were not offered Chase Headley for Juan Francisco, and that's not one of the options that they had.
That being said, maybe we could have gone and got him.
As I said at the time, I don't want Chase Headley here.
Well,
I mean, we didn't know that Brett Laurie was going to get hurt again, of course. But Chase Headley's a guy with an existing injury. He's got a herniated disc in his back. And I think to ask him to come here and play on turf with his back already hurt is just asking for trouble.
Well, this is what I wanted to say. To counter that point, okay, you've also mentioned that he's not having a great year.
He's not.
What I'm calling is to say that if you look at his under-the-hood stats, he's not having a bad year at all. He's having an unlucky year with zero protection in San Diego.
But he's done the same things in New York.
He's been decent in New York. He hasn't had a great time in New York, but he's at least contributed something. And I'm only putting him up against Juan Francisco.
Yeah, I know. And the bar's not very high. You're right. But he had a .651 OPS with the Padres. He's got a .695 OPS with the Yankees.
But that's the wrong number to look at. The right number to look at is his swinging rate outside of pitches in the strike zone.
No, it's
his
not.
Swinging rate overall.
No. It's not, though.
Batting average on balls in play, but it is.
But no, it's not, because those are the numbers that we use to attempt to predict how people are going to do. And what actually counts is what is happening. And what is happening is that he's hitting .241. Now, he's hitting .241 with the Yankees. He's hitting .241 with a .341 on base, which is lovely, and a .354 slugging, which is not. But those stats, those advanced stats, tell us what, quote-unquote, should be happening, what is actually happening.
I completely disagree. He's got a line drive rate of 26%.
He's hitting .241.
But his batting average on balls in play is under .300 with a line drive rate of 26%.
But he's hitting .241.
But what I'm saying is that he's getting unlucky with a line drive rate.
Yes, he's getting. I agree with you that he's getting unlucky. Yes,
well,
you're right.
If you stick an unlucky guy in a Blue Jays lineup in a hitter's park, you take him out of Petco and you give him some protection, or you know, and also in terms of him fielding, the other aspect I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, he's a much better defender.
Put him on the road. Put him on the field in the road. We've had a couple road trips. We couldn't have used him for most of the road trips.
Sam, yelling at me is not going to help, all right? Listen to me. I know that advanced stats are important, and I know that they have predictive value, and I know some predictive value, not nearly as much as people who swear by them believe they do. And I know that guys get unlucky, and I know that when someone's getting unlucky, it means that their luck is due to change. But I also know that Chase Headley has a herniated disc in his back, and that you're not going to trade an asset for a guy so that you can use him exclusively on the road, which is an unbelievable waste of a roster spot. And that regardless of the luck stats involved, the actual historical record of what he's doing is just okay, not that good. No?
And what's Juan Francisco doing?
Even worse.
Well, there you go.
But you don't have to give up an asset to get Juan Francisco. And we don't know what that asset was that the Blue Jays would have had to give up to get Chase Headley. And again, I firmly believe that if Chase Headley comes here already with a herniated disc in his back, he's on the disabled list by now.
Okay. I hear your point. I respectfully disagree. And I disagree with how you analyze those advanced stats. I just don't see how you can argue with a guy that has clearly, from the advanced stats, is getting unlucky and has a much higher contact rate. He swings less at pitches outside of the zone. He swings and misses less. He pops balls up less in the infield and has a way higher line drive rate.
Yeah, but you compare him to Juan Francisco. Juan Francisco has been terrible for 3 months. I understand this. And I would love to have somebody else there. But again, you're missing the point that I'm trying to make, and I respectfully respect your respectful disagreement and your right to do so. But for me, actual historical record matters more than stats that show he's been unlucky in getting that actual historical record. And it also comes down to the fact that they were getting Brett Laurie back. And to have 2 weeks of Chase Headley, you hope he stays healthy for those 2 weeks, is not worth giving up an asset for. If they had known that Brett Laurie was going to be out the majority of the season at that point, then everything changes. Everything. But they didn't know that. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-3 today. Jason in Toronto. Jason, who's the Blue Jay equivalent of Mark Burley coming back and pitching here?
Well, I'm going to have to throw Dave Steeb out there just because he's one of our wonderful accolades that played at the Mistake by the Lake, and anyone who had to play there deserves mention.
Interesting use of the word accolade, but okay. He definitely does deserve mention.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know, he really wasn't a part of that World Series win.
Yeah, but if we're looking at comparing a pitcher to a pitcher, I'm going to throw Dave Steeb out there for his abilities to be matched with an ability, not where he went with that ability.
I have no idea what that means, but it sounded great.
What's that?
I said I have no idea what that means, but it sounded great.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, no, but like I'm just saying, Dave's the only guy I can think of that comes close to someone being, you know, as good as Burley's been for us and Chicago.
Yeah, and for as long, you're absolutely right. But that whole World Series thing, I think, for me, is why I can't really put my finger on one Blue Jay guy. But Steve's as good a name as any and better than most.
Well, Toronto fan, Toronto supporter, love the fan, love sports, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to throw Steve out there.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. Dave Steeb, to me, it's a travesty that he didn't get more run in Hall of Fame voting. I'm a big fan of Jack Morris and got to work with him for a year last year in the booth. I don't think there's any question that Jack Morris was at the very least a bubble Hall of Famer. And I think Dave Steeb was just about every bit as good. Now, Jack did have the 91 World Series that Dave Steeb did not. No question about that. But the fact that Steve didn't even get 5% his first time on the ballot is a disgrace. Owen in Toronto, you're on Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Mike. You know, it's your question about the Mark Burley.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of a younger baseball fan, so I don't know all these pitchers you're naming, at least all of them.
Oh, man.
But I
gotta read up.
I have to say one that I know. I guess I would say Roy Halladay. It's not really fair because I'm a younger fan, but I guess of what I've seen, I would say Roy Halladay. Of what I've seen in the past, 10 years or whatever.
Well, and that's what our producer, Joe Sicilia, said, Roy Halladay also. But you know, for me, it's not this. Halladay, flip a coin between Halladay and Steve for the best guy who's ever pitched here, and it's probably Halladay, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Right.
But
okay.
He was never part of a winning team.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. You know, it's unfortunate you didn't get a winning team. Okay, so I got two questions. My first main question is about Edmund Encarnacion. He just came back from injury. He was obviously, you know, he started off, he had that crazy month. I think that was April. I'm not sure exactly. I think it was April that was the month he had like 16 home runs.
May. It was May.
May. Sorry about that. I wasn't sure.
That's all right.
Do you think that he can have, like, obviously, I don't know if he can be as good as he was at the beginning, but do you think he'd have a good ending to like the season, or do you think he might not pick up where he left off from?
I think there's a chance for both. I mean, it's going to be hard for him to hit another 16 home runs in a month. That's something that, you know, normal human beings almost never do. He's tied with Mickey Mantle and Harmon Killebrew with the May that he had.
Right.
But, you know, Edwin has been one of the best sluggers in the game for the last 3 years. So I certainly do expect him to be a very, very good player for them over the final 6 weeks of the season. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. And also the next question. The Blue Jays obviously been struggling a bit. You know, it was nice to see them win today I thought Burley was quite good. Unfortunately, he had to give up those three runs and cut his day a bit short. But I still thought he had a solid overall day, you know, better than some of his starts. Like you said, at the beginning of the season when he was, what, like 10-1 or whatever, you said, it's going to happen. He's going to have his days. You're going to see. It's not going to be like this. He's going to have those bad days. And sure enough, you were right. But, I mean, I'll take today for sure. But,
as will I for sure.
Yeah. My question is, it would be if we can get division, like the division, that'd be like amazing. But I don't really know if I see that coming or anybody does. But I mean, if it happens, it does. But realistically, how many games like would you think it would take to get the wild card? Like how many games do you think we'd have to win?
I have no idea.
Don't know for sure, but
no idea. You're not the first who's asked, and I think a lot of people want to know. And I would love to know too how many wins it's going to take to win the wild card. I have no clue. 86 might do it. Who knows? They're in competition with a bunch of very flawed teams, and so they're going to have to start winning some ball games. That's basically what they're going to have to do. They have to be 3.5 games better than right now the Detroit Tigers. Whether that winds up being Kansas City or Seattle or whoever, they're going to have to be 3.5-4 games better than them down the stretch. And the good thing is, as far as the division is concerned, it certainly doesn't look good by any means to be 6.5 games out with 38 games to play, but they do have 6 games left against the Orioles. You hate to put yourself in a position where you have to win all those games, so you want to knock a few games off that lead between now and the middle of September, but there's certainly it's not a matter where all hope is lost. It's going to be extremely difficult, though. Thanks for the call. Eddie is in Thornhill. Eddie, who's your Mark Burley coming back in a Blue Jay uniform?
I have to go with Dave Steeb as well. I mean, for all his one-hitters and then finally getting his no-hitter.
That was awesome, wasn't it?
And then he was really the guy that brought the Blue Jays up to respectability leading up to 1985. I mean, he was the main guy at that time. And I got to go with him.
He was. All those things you say are true. I would have loved it if he'd have been a bigger part of the World Series win, but he was the first guy out there running in 92, and I can still see that picture of him carrying his hat out to the mound because it fell off his head when he jumped out of the dugout. But, yeah, all those one-hitters and then finally the no-hitter, the all-star start, I think in 83 where he threw 3 perfect innings, and I remember how huge that was. Dave Steeb was the Blue Jays for a very long time.
Yeah. Mike, there's one more point I want to make, if I can. I'm not going to start here saying who the Blue Jays should have gotten and who they shouldn't have, because, you know, it's not my job, and I'm not really that knowledgeable, to be honest with you, in terms of that. But I got to think that if the Blue Jays don't make the wild card, I mean, I have to say that Anthopoulos has had a bad year, because when Blue Jays had such an explosive offense in May, when 3 guys go down like that for clearly more than just a few days, and it's clear that their offense is really suffering, and they're putting out guys that really shouldn't be out there, he's got to find a way to get at least one guy to be a serviceable major leaguer to help them through that time. And they read that, you know, and that's going to be the downfall if they don't make it, is that period of time when those 3 guys are out.
But they played 500 ball in that period of time when those 3 guys were out.
Well, they were, what, 14 games above 500, though, when they went down, right?
No. They were 14 games above 500 at their peak point in the season when they were 38-24 on June 5th, 6th? June 5th or 6th. After the sweep of the Tigers in the first game, that Friday win over the St. Louis on June 6th, they were 38-24. Lori broke his finger in Cincinnati when he got hit by a pitch, and they were only 7 games over 500 at that point in time. And what they managed to do, and you know, you're right, Alex didn't go out and get anybody. They found Juan Francisco, and he was awesome for 3 weeks and has been pretty terrible since. Dan Johnson was helpful, but Dan Johnson got hurt too. They brought in Reimold, who got hurt right away as well. So your backups to your backups are getting hurt. But what you want to do when you lose big pieces of your lineup is tread water until they get back. And that's what the Blue Jays did. They treaded water until Edwin Encarnacion and Adam Lind got back, and now they have to start winning again.
I don't know if you can say that blowing a six-game lead in the division to being a couple of games out of the second wild card is really treading water.
Yeah, but you're crossing things up. I mean, you're confusing the time when the Blue Jays started losing to the time when they got hurt. The Blue Jays had a six-game lead on June 6th. Brett Laurie got hurt on June 22nd, and the lead was only a game and a half by then. When Edwin got hurt on July 5th, they were a game out. So that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Those are important things to note.
Yeah, I see the point. But still, when three guys go down, and it's clear they were down, for, you know, these weren't short-term injuries. So I think at least one guy, he's got to find a way to get at least one guy.
Well, he got Reimold. He had Johnson. They both got hurt. When your backups are getting hurt, you're in trouble. And again, they still managed to play 500 ball without Adam Lind, and very close to 500 ball without Lind and Encarnacion together. Blue Jays beat the White Sox 6-3. I've been asking people, with Mark Burley making his first start as a visitor against the White Sox, what would the Jays equivalent of that be? I don't think they have one. I think Dave Steeb is the closest you can come. But Mark Burley pitched the first 12 years of his career there, won a World Series, pitched a perfect game. Blue Jays don't really have anybody like that, I don't think. Peter in St. Catharines, welcome to Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I would actually probably have to agree with you about Dave Steeb. Although I agree he should have been more, I would like to see him more of a factor in that 92 year.
Yeah, I mean, not his fault, he was hurt, but...
No.
But, yeah, he really wasn't a factor in 92 right. at all. But
the first guy to leap into hug Joe Carter.
Yeah.
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 Yep. Okay, recent news that the Maple Leafs are going to be erecting statues in anticipation of their centennial, I have three names. If the Blue Jays ever decide to go down that route, the first three statues I would probably have erected, Roberto Alomar, Pat Gillick, and Tom Cheek.
No Wayne Nordhagen, huh?
No.
It would be, you know what? I hadn't even thought of Tom and Pat Gillick as far as statues go. I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. But I think that if you're going to erect statues for the Blue Jays, and that's another great phone topic, I think Alomar has to be. I think Joe Carter has to get a statue.
Oh, yes. Oh,
for
yes.
that home run.
But, I mean, in terms of, those three are, the three I mentioned, are all in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, it's true. It's true. That's a very good argument. I'm never going to argue against Tom Cheek getting a statue and Pat Gillick, the architect. I think maybe Gillick and Beeston together in a statue, maybe. But
you know, there's already a statue of Ted Rogers out there.
Yes, I do know there's a statue of Ted Rogers out there. Yes, I remember the dedication of it quite well. There should be some players out there. You know, you go to other ballparks in other cities and you see their historical icons there. I do think a Joe Carter statue in the in mid-leap around the bases after that home run is something that would be a wonderful addition to the area around Rogers Center. I don't know, where would you put it? South end? The north end? On the bridge there for across from CN Tower? I don't know. That's interesting. Well, interesting to me anyway. I don't know if it's interesting to the rest of you. So let's get to another caller, shall we? Let's go to Dave in Lindsay. You're on Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hello, Michael. How are you tonight?
I'm all right, Dave. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
Now, this players coming back, we can do positional players as well, not just pitchers?
No, see, I was thinking just pitchers. I think positional players kind of opens it up a little more to a ton of guys, but I'm thinking specifically pitchers.
All right. Well, did Dave Steeb leave? Did he go anywhere else?
He went to the White Sox, actually. Not for long, and he wasn't very good, and he came back with the Blue Jays in 96 or something after having been there a coach for a while. He decided he was going to have a comeback, and it was a very short one. But, yeah, Dave Steeb spent 1993. He made four starts with the White Sox in 1993.
But he never pitched against the Jays, though.
I don't believe he ever did pitch against the Jays.
See, so I don't really see that connection. Hey, do you remember where you were, the no-hitter?
Yeah. Do I remember where I was? Man, I can see it. I can see Junior Felix making that catch and being afraid that he was going to drop it. I think I might have heard it on the radio.
I remember
where I was when he had the perfect game against the Yankees that he lost with two out in the ninth. But I think I heard that the no-hitter on the radio.
But for that, for a player coming back, I think John Olerud. I'm just going to throw it out there. I know we're not doing positional players, but he was so good for the Jays, and then he goes to Seattle, and then you see him again, and you don't feel bad. You're not like, oh, what a jerk, he bailed on it. You felt good about him going home.
Yeah, but there are a lot of guys who you should feel like, you shouldn't feel like, what a jerk for bailing on us. And the Blue Jays really screwed with John Olerud. I mean, that was one of the greatest mistakes that this team ever made, the way they treated him at the end.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned him. But looking for pitchers only. By the way, Steeb's starts, three of them were in Chicago. The only road start he made as a non-Blue Jay was in Seattle. So, yeah, never pitched here. It would have been interesting to see what the reaction would have been when he came back. We weren't in the business as Toronto fans back then of booing everyone who used to wear the uniform just because we recognized them. Those days have changed. Blue Jays snap the losing streak. They beat the White Sox 6-3 tonight. Time for another call or two. Oh, probably just one. Jason is in Kitchener. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
All right. Thank you.
You know what? I kind of think that where Burley is now, he reminds me of Jim Clancy.
Interesting. Why?
You know what? Kind of a finesse pitcher. He's kind of really, he's now, you know, he is what he is, right?
So, well, but so is everybody.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But you know what? He's a 50-50 pitcher, you know, in terms of wins and losses. But he's still a good guy to have on your top five, right? So,
and that's what Jim Clancy was to you?
Yeah, I remember watching him, and he certainly wasn't Steve, for sure.
Nope.
But he was good one day, not so great the next. But you know what? Burley kind of reminds me of him, actually.
Okay. I mean, I remember Clancy as a workhorse, which Burley certainly is, a guy who rarely got hurt. And it sucked that 1985 was the first time he really missed significant time, because that was the year that the Blue Jays were really good, and he had a good year for what he could pitch. But he was, you know, it's hard to say. Well, first of all, I don't believe anybody's a 500 pitcher, because it really doesn't have a lot to do with what you do, your one-loss record. But Jim Clancy was a guy who pitched really well on a really terrible team for a lot of years, and then pitched okay on a very good team for a while. But he wasn't going to blow anybody away, didn't strike out a lot of people, gave up a bunch of hits. And in that way, I mean, I don't think anybody ever called him a finesse righty, but in that way, he's pretty similar to Mark Burley. And a good bounce back for Burley, and a great start in Chicago tonight for him, especially after the three of the last four were stinkers. We're back tomorrow at 1:30 for a 2:10 first pitch. See you then.